Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Yeah.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there,
quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms, but I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Today's podcast, my live stream, because we're on a live stream right now, is titled Black Folks Giving Away the 40 Acres and a Mule. I also could have named this podcast worse than Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street was maybe not an isolated incident, but that's the one that a lot of people talk about, and they throw in Rosewood occasionally too. But the biggest destroyer, and you can call in debate me about it, 619-768-2945. In my opinion, the biggest destroyer of black neighborhoods in the United States are black folk. No, they're not torturing the neighborhood, but they're selling the ancestral house. I'll give an example. I have a house, just like many others have a house, that doesn't matter what city it's in. But right next door, I have a neighbor that reached 100 years old this past January. Just found out a few days ago that now she's in a nursing home. She's doing all right, but, you know, she's in a nursing home. Now, she had two children, and she's a great-grandmother, possibly even a great-grandmother by now at 100. But the children that she gave birth to, son and daughter, they have decided to put that house up, my next-door neighbor's house, up on the market, and the house will probably fetch on a low end $500,000, on a high end probably $700,000. They have decided to sell the house, which is the ancestral home. That's the way I call it. I know she came up, she's originally from, I'll say a southern state, and I won't say the exact state, but a southern state. And I got married, and I forgot where, because I knew her husband when I was little. And what's interesting, she raised her family and all that, and she even went back and, because when she got married and got a home and, was pretty successful at what she was doing, but she hadn't finished high school, so she went on and she got her GED after her kids got their paper, their high school diploma. For years she was, would drive herself to church and, Bible study, and, you see her walking in the morning. But anyway, she's 100 years old, still living right now, but the children, her children, have decided to sell the house. And that, in my opinion, is the primary way, the number one way, that black folks, not white folks, black folks have single-handedly destroyed black neighborhoods and generational wealth for decades now. So we're going to start a program here of education, hands-on education, to hopefully reverse that trend, at least among some individuals. But I'm going to play Neely Fuller again. Where was he? Oh, yeah. I'm going to play him again because essentially these are our marching orders of what we need to do. This is just the first audio, and then we'll play another one.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs. That's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right, we're going to play Solar Cabin. So we're going to start something as of today on doing something on a weekly basis. Hopefully it'll morph into something. Not hopefully. We're going to start weekly. Gradually progress it to doing something daily based on what Neely Fuller just said. Because, once again, in my opinion, black folks have been giving away the 40 acres and the mule, which is more devastating than a Black Wall Street or any other catastrophe. And we're going to break down what mule, because the house is the represents the 40 acres. The mule is what kind of work you can get out of the house. We'll go back into that in a moment. First, Solar Cabin, because this is outlining what we'll be doing, a la Neely Fuller.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about three-fourths of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat, takes a lot less money to cool, it's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine, or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
All right, that's our little cookie cutter that I think anybody can do, particularly on a group level. 2,000. Now, let me tell you something right now. You're not going to be able to do this in a major urbanized city like Chicago. You're not going to be able to do it in the city of Chicago proper. However, if you drive 45 minutes to an hour outside of Chicago to someplace like Pembroke, Illinois, Hopkins Park, Illinois, I've been to both of those places are one and the same. A rural area, you can do it. Okay? You're not going to be able to do this in Washington, D.C. That's why we had exclusionary zoning yesterday. D.C. proper has no rural areas. Okay? In the suburbs surrounding D.C., you're not going to pull off. But if you drive 45 minutes outside the city, pick your direction, or definitely an hour outside the city, or even an hour and a half outside the city, particularly if you get into West Virginia or if you go up Route 70 outside of Hagerstown, you can do this. Okay. Where I'm at, you can do granny flats in Central Florida. However, I've got 4 acres in a rural area of, matter of fact, let me tell you how Florida is. Florida, if you get a map of Florida and you reach Central Florida, and this is the part of Central Florida, you go from like St. Petersburg at the Gulf of Mexico and just go east, draw a straight line all the way, you know, past Orlando to Daytona Beach to the Atlantic Ocean. All right, let's call that Central Florida. That dividing line on down, okay, well, you got metro areas like St. Pete, Tampa, Orlando Metro. No, Orlando proper. Because if you go just a little bit outside of Orlando, you can build that solar type cabin. We're off the grid areas. You know, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Broward County, Dade County, forget it. You go towards Lake Okeechobee, you can do it, because there's a lot of rural area down there. But from that dividing line from Central Florida, you go up. Forget about Jacksonville, forget about Tampa, Tallahassee, the state capital. Florida, to a high degree, 67 counties in Florida, it's rural. So a 3-hour drive from here, actually a 2-hour drive from where I'm at right now, it's rural. You can basically rock and roll and virtually build what you want to build. Okay. And across the United States, particularly if you stay away from what I call the 95 corridor. Now, the 95 corridor that I'm speaking about, the part of it is from Richmond, Virginia, on up to, let's say, you get to New York City. Forget about any, it's too many people, too densely populated. But, you know, if you get to, like the state of Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, you can rock and roll, okay? West Virginia, the whole state, you can rock and roll, all right? Now, you might be able to do it in Morgantown, West Virginia, but you got the rest of the state to rock and roll with. Texas, as long as you stay away from San Antonio, Houston, and the Dallas Metroplex, which includes Fort Worth, I've got some land in far west Texas. You can basically rock and roll and do what you want to do. In California, avoid the, what do you call it, the Inland Empire, L.A. Los Angeles County, L.A., and all those places, and the Bay Area. Yeah, for instance, I had a friend of mine. She's been on here a couple of times. She was living in the part of the Bay Area in Livermore, California, and she was struggling for years. I got to get her on here one day. She moved to up into the Mount Shasta area of California on, like, practically 3 acres. I think it's like 2.7 acres. Got a stream running through her property. Grows, not all of her food, but grows a portion of her food. Got chickens and all that stuff there. Same state, but she just moved to a rural area. So our resident black historian on here, Professor Rhonda Ragsdale, she moved from Houston, Texas, to, I think she's got a couple of acres somewhere in Oregon. She was on here earlier this year for two or three special podcasts to talk about that. So you got to pick, and there are a lot of pockets of freedom, as somebody would call it, where you can do that. But you're not going to do it in D.C., Baltimore, L.A., Seattle, or those places. All right. But there are places where you can do it. So going back to when I the title of today's podcast, Black Folks Giving Away the 40 Acres of Mule. So the Black Wall Street event was, but it was restricted to that 40 acres. But you have, I don't know how many black folks a day, or black families per day, that are making the same decision as my next door neighbors in D.C., where they individually decide, you know what, we're going to sell this house, and we're going to get our $500,000 to $700,000, and our children, grandchildren, and the clace of my next-door neighbor, grandchildren, the ancestral house will be gone. And this house, I have an emotional attachment to it because I went to birthday parties in this house. This is not my house. The next door neighbors went to birthday parties in that house. Made mud pies in that house. Foot races in the backyard or in the alley. We went to, there was a rec center that was open for years until they closed it down. We hung out there. Swings. We're talking about first, second, third grade. You know, swinging on the swings, playing in the sandbox, the neighborhood playground. That, all that house, that's what that represents. Coming home after school. The ancestral black people had. You can talk about Black Wall Street and white supremacy all you want. Once again, this is my opinion. You can debate me on it. But the number one killer of black neighborhoods in the United States of America, in my opinion, are black people themselves acting on a lone wolf basis. Land represents the 40 acres. The house the house might not be sitting on a 40-acre lot like this one is not sitting on not even an acre lot. But it represents the 40 acres. The mule represents what kind of work that house can do to keep on benefiting future blood relatives of any particular family. They can rent that house out. It can be an Airbnb. You can put that house to work where the house can eventually make millions, selling it. Now, this particular person has great-grandchildren by now. Her great-grandchildren's great-grandchildren could live in this house at a future date. But a lot of people don't know anything about estate planning. So that's why we shall have, along with, that's why I played the Nellie Fuller piece. Because that was something that was known and done on a Sunday afternoon or weekend afternoon. But the key is, and even if you know, you can't do it in your particular city. All right, well, that's all right. Jump in the car with your 9 friends, or 36 friends, as Robin pointed out accurately. Drive an hour outside of that city to a rural area where you can do it. And then once it's set up. Now, you can build it. Everybody's going to be learning some skills at the same time. You can build it and either live in it, put a relative in it, or rent it out. That's the mule. Turn that property into a business, and then that property is a mule. So it's something as simple as that. Robin, you there? Okay, she's around here somewhere. But now, not only black people do this, but I'm just saying. It's, right, Robin, if when you're back around, just press the button so I can see your light. But the Fuller piece is something simple. Historically and culturally, is something that black folks used to do. Not all black folks. But, and we're not trying to make it a movement. We already know that most people are not going to do it. But that's okay. But, as long as somebody does it, so we'll kick it off that way. Hold it now. I'm trying to find something here. Here we go. Once again, this is our basic blueprint.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Superhighways. So now if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? Excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
I was talking to a cat the other night. They want everybody looking for them. But everybody's looking for today. They're looking for escapism. You know what? I love to get down, Jack.
Yeah.
And when I get down, you understand, I don't have to go in an old funny bag. Say, all right, come on, I'll do this. I mean, do what I want, man. I can't, you understand? That's the way I feel. You know, I believe I get down right about here.
Right on.
But if I get down, you know, Bud got out of sight, too, coming up. Record Bud right here, you know.
Sure.
So we're trying to get our thing out of the way before Bud gets into it. Bud, come here, get on before we...
Yeah.
Is it all right?
Yeah.
Bud, do you think it's going to be a hit, Bud, you cut?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You think it's going to be a hit? Yeah. Well, I know it's a smash. Because you're in the thing, man. You're the same way as that, you know. It's got to be a hit.
Loud.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that
hey.
Man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch them. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What'd you say, bro?
What's happening? Brown.
Huh. Trying to get down.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, look at him. We can't have that.
That's right.
Alcohol. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, J-Tom?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now.
Yeah. And on the sea.
Excuse me, Cap, while I rap.
Okay, this board is kind of sticking this morning. But anyway, today's podcast is titled Black Folks Giving Away the 40 Acres and the Mule. Something that Neely Fuller mentioned, and I'll put it to my generation. I'm a baby boomer. But a lot of the people that I came up with, we don't know how to make anything. We don't know how to manufacture anything. We'll be back with that in a moment.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
How'd it go? We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. A close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
Now, the title of today's podcast, once again, is Black Folks Giving Away the 40 Acres and the Mule. That audio that I just played, and I've played it several times on here before, but let me break it down. That's from the TV show The Wire. And in that particular scene, the three characters are Avon Barksdale, who, that's a real person in real life, Avon Barksdale, Baltimore. Look him up online. Avon Barksdale, who is portrayed in The Wire as a drug kingpin on the west side of Baltimore, Maryland. You have Cuddy. Who, that's the guy when he, you know, he says he well, I'll go back to Cuddy in a moment. And then you have Slim Charles. All three of these guys are involved in the drug gang. Okay. Cuddy, his profession, to be honest about it, he did a long stretch in prison. But his profession was killing people. In a TV show, The Wire, they call them soldiers. Soldiers basically kill people. They're assassins. Okay, that was basically Cuddy's career choice. He was an assassin, street name, soldier, for drug kingpins. That was his job description. Okay, and then you have Slim Charles, who was a lieutenant, and he did a little bit of everything. Slim Charles eventually, at the end of The Wire, he became a drug kingpin, and the whole series ended. Now, the point I want to make is this, in relation to our title of today's podcast, which relates to generational wealth and black folks killing more black neighborhoods than white people can ever do, than 1,000 Wall Streets could ever do. Black people are the number one killers or destroyers of black neighborhoods. Because I'm going to bring it down to that, to the clip that I just played, and relate it to something that we used to do, and that's why I played the Nellie Fuller piece this morning. Slim Charles, Cuddy, and his real name in the TV show was Dennis Wise, I believe, and Avon Barksdale, drunk kickman, all involved in the drug game, because as you heard, Avon sent Cuddy and Slim Charles to kill some people. All of it centered around selling drugs. The common denominator with these three people is none of them know how to make shit. They don't know how to build a house. They don't know how to build a box. They probably know nothing about arts and craft. They probably never been to an arts and craft class before. They don't know how to grow their own food. What they do know is how to kill people and how to sell drugs in black neighborhoods. They weren't selling in white neighborhoods. They were selling in black neighborhoods right there in Baltimore. Most of the killings that happened up in Chicago, gang-related or non-gang-related, I bet you if you took a survey, I would say, and this is a very conservative number, 95% of the people that pull those triggers don't know how to build the word here, manufacture. They don't know how to put together a T-shirt. The clothes on their back, they don't know how. 95%, that's a very conservative number. Really, it's probably more like 99%. Don't know how to manufacture any of the clothing that they're wearing. China's basically got that market to a high degree. Because in China, it's a culture of manufacturing, of making things. They don't know how, a lot of them don't know how to cook. How to make an apple pie. How to make a pumpkin pie. How to plant a garden. We're not even talking about a farm. Just a little black backyard or tabletop garden. Let alone getting into, anything that you can think that is made, most people that are in those circles don't know how to make anything. Now, there are plenty of black people that do know how to make things. Matter of fact, the person that started Bethune-Cookman College, Mary Cloud Bethune. You know, when they were coming up against economic times, you know, when they needed money for something, one of the things that they did, now this is very simple. They would bake pies and cakes and then sell it by the slice in order to get the money that they need for Bethune-Cookman College. Something that simple. You know, you don't have to have an MBA from Harvard or Yale or Wharton. Learn how to make something. Cuddy got out of the game. Let's find out what Cuddy ended up doing.
Did you prime it? That little rubber ball right there next to the spark plug. Got to push it in 3 times before you try to start it. Gets the gas going to the car.
You want the truth? I ain't never used one of these. Never had no call to.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick you up for your landscaping skills. All these Spanish, they on paper too. Only use people like y'all. Sometimes it comes back on me, sometimes it works out fine.
Well, how long you been uptown?
10 years.
Hotter than a motherfucker out here.
Yeah, it's hot. Every day, you're going to be riding in the back of that hard truck, bouncing around. Every day. And your back's going to be yelling at you. Every day. I used to drive an SL, pretty gold convertible. Nice rims. I don't even think on that car no more.
You put it behind you, huh?
Some can't. I'm just saying, you want to stay on the straight. Ain't going to be no big reward to it. This is it, right here. Prime that bitch 3 times. She'll start right up.
Okay, that's Cuddy. Cuddy, after he got out of the game, you know, he needed a legitimate source of income. So what he did was he got hired on as day labor with a landscaper. And in that scene that we just played, and I can relate this to, once again, a lot of these killings that you hear about, not only in Chicago, but any urbanized area. A lot of those people, like you just heard Cuddy say, and his character in The Wire was 20-something, maybe early 30-something. He didn't know how to use a lawnmower. So a lot of people that are pulling these triggers out here have never learned. Hey, come on, a lawnmower? That's real simple. Now, the guy that he was talking to, he had done time too, but he came out and he started a landscaping business, and then he hired, which a lot of people do these days, you know, he hired day labor, because if you see the TV show Wire, because, I mean, and with the scenes that Cuddy's doing his landscaping, it's basically Cuddy, and Cuddy learned how to speak Spanish. He learned how to speak Spanish because all of his old co-workers on that day labor truck were Latinos. The game that he just got out of the drug dealing game. Now, he didn't sell anything or nothing like that. He was the assassin for the group. But if you think about it, you know, cocaine and hair, you know, that stuff, if you trace back the roots of cocaine or heroin, it's grown. Farmers grow it. That's their cash crop. But we don't know how to grow. Granted, you do have many black farmers out here. You do have a lot of black folks that have a garden and that, but we need more of it. Just basic. Learn how to feed yourself. If you know how to grow something, you know how to feed yourself. Okay. But the drug dealers out here are not in on the first thing. When was the last time you heard of somebody, a coca farmer, getting arrested or getting prison time? Or a poppy farmer in Afghanistan on America's Most Wanted? You don't hear those stories, but what you do hear is about your local drug dealer or local kingpin. There's a gazillion videos on, YouTube, you know, Big Meech, Frank Lucas, et cetera, Ray Fulettman, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. None of them grew anything. They were at the bottom of the food chain. Farming might not be a sexy, profession. But I'm just saying, I haven't heard anybody indict a coca farmer yet. Even on, what's his name? He's dead now. Pablo Escobar. Now, him and his, in the Cali cartel, Medellin cartel, you know, their thing was distribution. And they had some innovative distribution ways. Systems, but they didn't grow it. They weren't somebody else farmed it, and the farmer sold it to them. My solution, and it's just one strategy, is not a save all, it's not a silver bullet. Before you consider reparations, okay? Because even if you get reparations, the same old, as Umar Johnson says, you'll find a way to sell it back to somebody else. The ancestral home, the ancestral neighborhood can be kept intact. But you got to have the financial resources to do it. that simple ancestral home, if you're not going to have blood relatives live in it, you can use that house, convert that house into a mule and start generating passive income from that. Something as simple as that. Or you can set up some type of business, you know, sewing something, manufacturing something, baking pies, cupcakes, whatever. You know, if you go to the parking lot of a Home Depot, Menards, or Lowe's, particularly in some of your larger cities, you might see somebody in a station wagon, typically a Latina, in a station wagon, and she's selling lunches to, well, anybody who's available, but mostly Latino dudes buy the lunches and whatnot. But she'll sell to anybody. Black folks used to do that. If you know how to make sandwiches, that's making something. It can be something, I mean, two pieces of bread, I don't know, whatever you want on it, mustard, mayonnaise, whatever it is. But you had to do that. And unfortunately, three popular shows in the black community in contemporary times, Power, it's about a drug dealer out of New York City, central figure, Ghost. Ghost sells drugs, but he doesn't make anything. Empire, that's a little bit better. They were former drug dealers, but they deal in intellectual property now, so they make music and they sell it. So that's cool. They're making something. You know, in their case, they're doing a lot of streams. The current one that's out, Snowfall, which is loosely based on the real-life character of Rick Ross, who Warren Houston, their friend, Warren Houston's interviewed him, and we're going to have him on here by the end of this year, paid somebody to get him on. But in Snowfall, the character, Franklin Saint. Franklin Saint, he's a salesman, drug kingpin, but he doesn't, nobody in his organization makes, well, no, hold on, you know what, let me correct myself. They took cocaine and they rocked it up, as the slang they use. And they manufacture crack cocaine. I'm not suggesting that you manufacture anything illegal. But there's a whole lot of things. Like in the film Baby Boy, matter of fact, if I can find it real quick before we go to the phone lines. There's a scene in there where the character speaking says, how many millionaires are you wearing? I'm trying to find it. But if I can't find it, those of you who are listening, oh, man, I got somewhere in this library. How many millionaires are you wearing right now? Whatever shoes you're wearing has made somebody a millionaire, if not billionaire. The socks, if you're wearing them, has made somebody. Every stitch of clothing that you're wearing, there's millionaires or possibly even billionaires behind it. They know how to make something. And what can be simple? A pair of socks or a pair of pantyhose, a pair of underwear. We're talking about underwear is, well, you can make sexy underwear, lingerie and all that. But essentially, we're talking about unsexy professions. But they earn a lot of money. Three City, which I play on here at least once, if not twice a week. Factory City, they're making coffee pots. They're making making an iron is an unsexy object. A coffee pot is an unsexy object. But when you're making 6,000 coffee pots in a day, and the money that you make from selling those coffee pots, 6,000 coffee pots a day, then the kind of cash flow that you're going to get back is sexy, in my opinion. Okay, we're getting ready to go to the phone lines here. My board is sticking. That's why I was getting kind of hesitant here. But let's see. Anyway, your thoughts on today's title, Black Folks, and Robin, if you're there, press 1. Black folks giving away the 40 acres and the mule. Now we can, I could also title it, Families, Regardless of Race or Color, Giving Away 40 Acres. I could have done that, but I didn't. I'm just saying it because that's what my next door neighbor's doing. Now, let me make this clear, too. This is, I would even consider, part of home training within a family, because you don't want to give the house away. You want to, I believe in setting up a family school and doing it that way. All right, we're going to be back in a couple of minutes and go to the front lines.
Because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some. All right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms, but I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Now, the last part of what Nellie Ford, I disagree with him in part. We got to stop depending on outside forces. And I give an example. I went to high school with some guys. I didn't know this until really in the last couple of years. Their father built the house that they lived in, and he also built four more houses. They bought some land, and he built a total of five houses. The family lived in one of them. Okay. None of his children learned how to build the house. And I guess what has happened is, and it's been rampant, is for some reason my generation, and I'm a boomer, not all of us, but the critical mass of us, took no interest in some of the things that our parents did. Like I said, now none of the families, I mean, none of the blood relations are living in any of those houses now. None of the, and they had all boys. None of the sons took an interest in carpentry and house building, and they're paying rent today. I think one of them had to move in with one of their children. And that's the generation. Like I say, I went to school with these guys. I know a bunch of people, black, they have college degrees. If you ask them to sew any, could they reproduce any of the clothing on their back, they couldn't do it. Some people, and I'm going to go over to the ladies with this one, I've dated some women in the past that some couldn't cook or didn't know how to cook, or they didn't like cooking. I know in one relationship where I was in, except for one meal, I did all the cooking. We ate out a lot, but when we ate at home or whatever, I did all the cooking. I think one of the primary tools that black folks need to keep the 40 acres and the mule that we do have, and the mule represents making something, manufacturing something. It could be a socks, shoes, a baseball hat, T-shirts. If you want to go digital, websites, e-books. We have to get back into making something and then teaching the future generations on how to make something. They could start as something as simple with kids as arts and craft. Even if you're an adult, you know, there are many arts and craft projects that you can make that are useful for your own self-enjoyment, or, you know, learn how to make a birdhouse, sell a birdhouses. Learn how to make a doghouse, sell a doghouse. Okay, before I go on another rant here, let me go to the phone lines. But anyway, black folks giving away the 40 acres of mule, 619-768-2945. Once again, I believe, I'm not saying I'm right, I'm just believing, that the number one destroyer of black wealth, particularly generational wealth, in the black, and no government can fix this, reparations can't fix this one, are black families on a lone wolf basis that are selling the ancestral house. Perfectly legal to do it. But then come back around and ask for the government for reparations. That doesn't make any sense to me. 314, your mic is open.
Hello, Mr. Davis. How are you, sir?
I can't complain. It's a nice, well, any day is a nice day, even if it's raining.
No, you know how it's destroyed is that when you have these fools moving your damn community, and there goes the property values. That's the biggest destroyer. Because you speaking on individuals, well, they hurt the
group. Yeah, I was speaking on an individual basis, yeah.
Absolutely. They hurt the group. They hurt the group because that one eye, see, that's the reason why come they have these building codes, especially in certain zone areas. Like we talked about yesterday, if you got a neighborhood of brownstones, well, they ain't going to let you come in there and build a tiny house.
You're correct. You're absolutely correct. That wouldn't go with the brownstone thing.
It's going to bring down the value of that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And people have a right to have their property values protected and not obliterated by careless actions.
And that's all part of the education part of it. You gave a very good example. And, of course, I mentioned, you know, you're not going to build a tiny house in the neighborhood of brownstones in Brooklyn, New York. It's not going to happen. And that's okay. Go to where you can do it. But for the people who have brownstones, and probably I'm sure right now with baby boomers, you know, that they probably grew up in some of these brownstones that are worth millions now. Or several six figures. They need to become. Well, you mentioned zoning. People need to become politically active and learn about, you know, what the rules are and how to, what you just said, protect the value of their property. But see, a lot of people are not even doing that. They're not going to these, civic associations. They're not going to these civic association meetings.
Well, you know, here's the thing, like I said before. The thing that kill property is blacks who, and I guess it goes on to other groups too, but I can only talk about the ones I know the best and have observed and witnessed. It's when you have blacks moving into an area they've been directed there through the politics.
Right.
Like in North St. Louis County, when Dooley, a black County executive, Charles Dooley, blacks was complaining because all these Section 8 residencies was beginning to appear in North St. Louis County.
Okay.
To the point they say, we don't want no more because it brings down their property value. And yes, it was blacks that was moving in, not necessarily by design, but that's who did. Anybody can move in.
Well, I can see because I've dealt with some Section 8 people before, and not all Section 8 people, but boyfriend problems, having domestic altercations, you just fixed up the unit, and then the boyfriend comes in, I don't want all these guys around my children, and then they bust up the... So, yeah, I know that Section 8 crowd. And
here's the thing.
Whether they're black or white, Section 8 has problems.
Here's the thing.
People used to complain and say what broke up the black family when they didn't let the man stay in the house. Well, good goddamn, here you just described in Section 8 with the black male coming to the house causing problems. Well, hell, who wants him in the house if he's going to be causing those problems like you just described?
Yeah. I don't take Section 8 no more.
So maybe they should reapply whatever is under false pretense, because there was nothing written in law said the male could not be in the household. But since people want to believe that and people want to run with that like you're nearly fully, well, let's put that back in place, because apparently it has become a crippling effect today with the black boyfriend coming to the house tearing up stuff. Put it back in place. And then maybe that house would begin to maintain its appearance and not bring down the rest of the damn neighborhood and spread throughout the whole area. Because when that happened, black folks that's in these areas lose money, just like they did in Ferguson. They've been living there for decades. Then all of a sudden they start turning these townhouses, like the ones that's behind Ferguson Market where Mike Brown incident occurred with the store owner, turn those into Section 8. Then the ones over on Canfield Drive behind the Quick Trip that they burnt down during the riot, now you got problems. Now, those was commercial areas. Well, you can say commercial residential areas because they had apartments and so on, so on, so on. But you had people there in Ferguson also that had lived in the residential area, nothing but homes. See, Ferguson got two areas. They got the east area and they got the west area. The west area is out there where you have black and whites that's pretty wealthy.
Okay.
They have nice, pretty homes. In the east area, you got a starter home, mediocre homes, and you got those rental units like I just got through describing. Well, the people that had moved out there into them starter homes, those smaller homes, decades ago, they up and left with this Mike Brown stuff. When they moved out there where they are, whites left and went to West Florida, Ferguson. Those that can afford, some of them just went on in, across the Missouri River. Well, those blacks stayed in that starter home size property for decades. They increased the value, had asset, had liquidation built into the homes. Then, like I said, here come these riots. So guess what they done? And they began to do it before that because they started having that feeling. They began moving out. So they escaped. But they never could get the amount of money in their property that they had built in it. Because people are going to come and say, well, what the hell are you moving for? And sooner or later, they realize it. You know, people are going to drive in around the community and see what's going on. You know what the big telltale sign is? The schools. How are these schools performing academically? That's a telltale sign. You need not go no further. Yeah, really, you need not go no further.
That way, the school system at the time I was in D.C., that was rough.
Now, to keep things short.
But, of course, that all depended on the neighborhood, too, though.
Well, it depends on the family. It tells you a whole lot about the family.
Right.
You know, it tells you a whole lot about the family, the parents and the family, on how those children perform in school.
I know the working first PTA meeting I attended that night, I didn't see not one father. Now, maybe I missed somebody, but I didn't see him that night.
In the assessment of your property value, I'm looking at this assessment for 2021 for a piece of property. You got a residential. They got the land assessment. Then they got the improvements. Add the two together, you have your total value. With residential, the assessed tax is 19%. For agriculture, it's 12%. For commercial, it's 32%. So, if you was to take your land plus your improvement, what comes up to your total, and your taxes would be 19% of that total that you owe on that property. If you're commercial, it's going to be 32%. If it's agriculture, you're going to be 12%. That's the assessment information there in St. Louis County. I just happened to pull this up. Now, you played Umar Johnson with that stuff that he be talking about.
Okay.
Working for whites. My question is this. Well, who else are these young people coming out of the school, out of college, with these degrees, and hopefully they degreed in an area that's in high demand? Who else are they going to work for? They're going to work for somebody. And generally, more times than not, it's going to be a white established company. It don't necessarily mean it's owned by whites, because some companies is publicly trading. Boeing is publicly trading. Lockheed Martin is publicly trading. Caterpillar is publicly traded. Chevron and Shell is publicly traded. So how are you going to say that they're working for whites when anybody can own shares of the company? That's the kind of mess that too many people listen to, which they got a right to, that have their heads swimming. They don't know which way to turn. And they usually, when they do settle down, they turn in the wrong direction. You got to work for somebody in order to learn the business.
Hands down, the majority of people that graduate from HBCUs do, they want to work for an IBM or a Fortune 500 company.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Who else are they going to work for?
Yeah,
they're the ones that's paying the money.
Smaller firms, and there are plenty of smaller firms out there, but the smaller firms are not going to pay them the big paycheck they would like to get right out of college. So.
Yeah, you know why a small firm is small? Because they are working with the bread and crumbs, the crumbs that the bigger firms either don't want, basically that they don't want to fool with, because it takes too much money to mess with. I wouldn't bid a job under $100,000 because I couldn't mobilize it. By the time I even mobilized that project, in some cases, it's going to probably cost half that amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
So that's why small firms exist. It don't cost them some of the expenses. Plus, you know, when you're a bigger firm, if you do a project, well, you can't just do no one project. You got to constantly have things coming through the door because you got staff that you got to maintain.
You got to make that payroll.
Right. You got to keep that staff working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I didn't have projects, my key personnel, I brought into the warehouse and had them working on stuff, repairing things, sweeping the floor, painting the roof, painting the wall, washing the windows, repairing windows. That had nothing to do with the trade, but you can't let that valuable asset go. Or they usually go work for your competition.
That's true. That's true. You're right. The larger firm, you got to keep those employees working.
Some of those employees, I have to guarantee them 40 hours a week, no matter what happens. It could rain, or they work. They're going to automatically get that. That's in the contract you sign with the union that they work. Hell, that's what I got. I got 40, guaranteed 40 at the highest rate, whether I sat at home or whether I was up there on the project.
Okay.
Why is that? Because they didn't want to lose you.
Right. That's true. You're right.
And see, when people start companies in the type of company that Umar is talking about, these people probably can't even draw a salary. But yet and still, they're trying to draw a salary. They got to draw a salary. If you marry, you got family, you got kids, a house note, car note.
You
got to draw
careful.
A family out of a business that's not making no money.
You're right about that.
And somebody
and
who's well established.
Most college grads have got, I mean, they got debt already. You're right.
They got all those things that starting a business in its onslaught would not support them, less long, support the personnel that they need to hire. It ain't going to happen. Majority of the cases
right.
at the time.
That's true.
If you start a company that you selling, whatever, and you go out and secure supplies to stock your shelves, I can start a business right across the street and put you out of business within a matter of time. Why is that, L.A.? Simple. I don't need that business as a salary. That's going to be
right.
reflected in the cheaper prices than what you can do. And then as you have a lack of people coming through the door, you're going to resort to hazardous means to get people in the door. What does those mean? Well, you're going to say, well, let me cut prices and start bringing people in the door. Well, if people start coming in the door and cut prices, then how are you going to have the big full price in order to pay your overhead and expenses?
Right.
You can't do it. That's why I come, if it don't work on paper, it's not going to work in real life.
Thinking on paper, you're right. More people need to do it.
Yeah. So Umar is totally, totally out of place with all these discussions. You notice in the discussion, you start off working for whites. Then you want to correlate that by switching to slavery. Then you want to correlate why come it don't work and by switching to the politics. Then given enough time, he would have switched, waltzed, and danced all over the place. So if people go to college and seek degrees in areas of high demand, technology, high demand, sciences, high demand, you have to learn that business, that industry, before you can even think about venturing out on your own. Plus, you have to be able to acquire what's called bootstrap capital. I hear people complain about Bezos. I hear people complain about Elon Musk, about how their parents gave them money. Well, they're supposed to.
Bootstrapping.
And yes, when they say that people don't bootstrap, they got a point. Because when they went to college, those that did, if you go to Yale and Harvard, you got a better chance to use your bootstrap tendencies to create a network with like-mind-thinking people.
Right, right.
Umar Johnson is trying to talk
cut
to...
It off. Well, hold on. We got to cut it off for the day here. I got some stuff to take care of. Everybody have a good rest of the day.